and now.
Capital 263.
To Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawanda Henry Beatty. And yeah, welcome to the best political podcast 44 days out of the general election.
Is that how many days it is left?
Yeah, well, it's, for me, it's 1:30 in the morning on the 17th, so I think it's actually 43.
Oh, baby. Closer and closer we edge to the most important political decision that Zimbabwe will have to make in a long time. More important than 2013, I say.
Yeah, definitely.
This one marks a turning point for the country.
Yeah.
Anything with Mugabe was stagnant. It was the same, turning in the same space.
No, whatever happens is going to be a turning point, because whoever wins is going to have a legitimate mandate to rule. And then they can only succeed or fail on their own merits, really.
Yeah. And they've got 5 years
in
which to do it. When ED came, he was, 8 months out from an election? And you can do a lot in 8 months, but the support and the backing that he needed to get things done, he wasn't going to get it in that 8 month period.
You know,
the whole 8 months has been the whole 8 months has been about positioning himself for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Should he get the mandate in at the end of July?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful point. We always have this thing of thinking that we're exceptional, but it reminds me of Theresa May calling that general election, or the election in England, soon after taking control of the country, because she needed her own mandate to be able to rule.
Yeah, she did. Oh yeah, the snap election.
Yeah, which she didn't do as she expected to, but she still won.
Yeah, although it panned out, a bit badly for her. But yeah, you're right. That aspect of legitimacy and security as well is very important. And especially for where Zimbabwe is and where Zimbabwe wants to go, it's not something that we are going to accomplish on our own. And this is, evident in all of in both the major manifestos that are out, is that they're definitely hoping to get external support to take Zimbabwe forward in terms of its development. And so 8 months, like I mentioned, is a small space, but 5 years, a lot can be done in 5 years. And now it's just, it comes down to who you trust to be able to take Zimbabwe forward for the next 5 years. And it's a very important decision that, that Zimbabweans have to make.
Yeah. And they began, the first step in making that decision was the nomination court this last week. I think it sat on Thursday. So I think that's basically what we'll talk about this whole episode. There was enough drama there for maybe 3 or 4 episodes. So we'll just focus on the nomination court. But quickly before we get started, just like to shout out to Penyu for that interview with the good advocate and the aspiring member of parliament from Mount Pleasant, Fadzi Mahere. Wow, it was a good interview, well received. But obviously, man on the ground, she always does good work, and it's a pity we couldn't get her on today because she's incredible.
Yeah, no, shout out to Upenyu. That was well appreciated. Actually, we hope she's going to be doing more of those interviews. It was interesting to hear, some of the things that Fadzi was speaking about. One of them that stuck out was the role of parliamentarians, which I don't think is something that is addressed, or it makes me think that there is need for a civic education course, not just for citizens to understand the role of the elected officials, which is very important, but also for the elected officials to understand the roles that they are meant to be carrying out. You know, they played that clip from Themba Mliswa, where he was, you know, calling out PR MPs because they don't say anything. And, you know, Fadzi also spoke about that, you know, in terms of the role of MPs and what it is that they're supposed to be doing. A lot of them, I don't think, understand and end up being placeholders. So that's one aspect that needs to be looked at, is how do we educate our people and our elected officials as to what it is that they are meant to be doing when they are in certain positions. And it goes all the way from ward councillor to the president himself. I think the president, what it is you should and should not be doing as president. We've had a president who, you know, used to rule by decree at certain points. We still do. We have a cabinet that, you know, makes decisions randomly, some might say, or they make these decisions that, you know, people end up questioning. Fadzi brought up the one about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So that's something that we needs to be looked at the education system, all the way from, you know, what do they call it now? ERC?
Yeah.
ED, no, what do they call it? ED something.
Oh, for early learning.
Yeah, that before grade zero or whatever.
EDC, early development centers, EDC. They're called EDCs.
Yeah, EDC, all the way from EDCs to...
ED,
to PhD level. You know, I don't think you can ever stop learning the important. You can never stop civic education. I think there's always something to be added and subtracted and discussed in that field.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. And obviously, to the listeners, we're almost there to this election. Thanks for being on this journey with us. Yeah, it's been exciting. I would say that if we go through the archive, we've pretty much covered every significant political event in the last 18 months or so. It's a good archive to have. I'm sure we'll look back on this in a while and laugh about it and reminisce on how chaotic
some of the wild things that you said.
We literally we're podcasting while Mugabe was being removed from office. Anyway, nomination quote. Significant in that there is no Robert Mugabe on the ballot.
Yay! And the people say yay! yes, we definitely celebrate the fact that for the first time
in Zimbabwe,
history, we shall not have, not only will we not have Robert Mugabe, we won't have a Mugabe. they could have put Leo Mugabe, they could have put Chatunga Mugabe, they could have put Grace Mugabe, you know, there were other Mugabes who could have made it to the ballot, but none of their names appear, and we, you know, we celebrate that fact. But yeah, so we have, in this election on July 30th, there shall be 23 presidential candidates. I think this is the most we've ever had before. I'm not sure, but perhaps 5 or 6.
Yeah, I think there were 6. I saw the ballot papers compared side to side.
5 or 6 from previous elections. And now we have 23. Usha Joseph Makamba of Free Zim Congress, Chamisa Nelson of MDC Alliance, Chiguvare Tondrai Johannes of People's Progressive Party, Chikanga Evaristo Washington of Rebuild Zimbabwe, Zapasi Melba of Hashtag 1980 Freedom Movement Zimbabwe, Gava Mapfumo Peter of United Democratic Front, Hlabananga Kwanele of Republicans Party of Zimbabwe, Hove Mambi Divine of National Alliance of Patriotic and Democratic Republicans, We are only at 8. Kasia Muru, Blessing of Zimbabwe Partnership for Prosperity, Kupe Tokozani of Movement for Democratic Change, T. Maduku, Love More of National Constitutional Assembly, Mangoma Elton Steers of Coalition of Democrats, Manyika Noangoni of Build Zimbabwe Alliance, Mariachi Violet of United Democratic Movement, Nangagwa Emerson Dambudzo of Zimbabwe African National Union Patriotic Front, Moyonkosana Donald of Alliance for People's Agenda, Mteki Brian Taurai, an independent, Mugadza William Tawonezi of Bethel Christian Party, Mujuru Joyce Teurai Ropa of People's Rainbow Coalition, Munyanduri Tendai Peter of New Patriotic Front, Mutinire Ambrose of National Patriotic Front, Shumba Daniel of United Democratic Alliance, and Wilson Harry Peter of Democratic Opposition Party.
Yay!
Wow, that's a lot. I mean,
it's a lot. That's $23,000 that's been donated. In fact, let's say $21,000 Yand HGM.
Because there's only two real candidates.
There's only two real candidates.
I mean, so this is the thing. You know, I'm looking at this list. Chamisa, yes, I understand. Mnangagwa, yes, obviously. Mujuru, I understand where she's coming from.
Yeah. Moyo.
Moyonkosana, I mean, I don't agree with it, but I understand. Manyika, Noah Manyika, I get it as well.
And Kupe.
Ambrose Mutini. And Kupe, yes.
So those are the only people, right? Who I would give.
Mine is not even to give them a chance, but some of them I just simply understand why they're doing what they're doing. Everyone else on this list, though, I mean, Ambrose Mutini, I get it, but he in his right mind shouldn't think that he's going to win this election. Now, this is my question to the other. So there's 23 minus that other 17 people, right? Is, do they genuinely believe that they are going to get the 2.2 million votes required to win this election?
Look, like I said, you know, we've had this theory a lot, and Maporofita have been working overtime this election. And I use that as a specific example. I'm trying to find the particular candidate. I think it's
Mugadza William, Bethel Christian Party.
Yeah, who said that he doesn't have to campaign. He's been told that he's going to be president of Zimbabwe, so he'll be sitting at home.
No, I don't know who that is. It might not be him.
I think it's between, yeah, it's with Dredd, Taurai, Brian Mteki.
Oh, Mteki.
Yeah, who said he doesn't need to campaign because he's already knows that he's going to be the next president. He was shown.
So. I mean, fair enough. I understand when we are from a religious perspective and believe, they were shown by some divine intervention that this is their destiny and that is why they choose to do it. I will draw parallels to individuals who I want to be very politically correct here. I will draw parallels to individuals who may or may not have, some sort of mental issues that make them see and believe things. Hear and believe things. But for me, an individual who says that, who simply believes that they were shown something and they are not going to go out to canvass, because elections are about numbers. Simply, you have to have the people on your side. You can't have one voice in your head telling you that this is what it is. I'm going to question your sanity. And that's that. So that's all. That's some of the people I understand. There are various reasons, but for there to be 23 people on the list is quite incredible, especially where there are 17 or so people, some of them I've never even heard of. And I wonder what makes them so confident to pay $1,000 to say, this is what I intend to do.
I wish I'd lined up the clip. There's an TB at in Harare East, this at Cheesy Pity Shops actually this week, had a very funny, a stand-up routine about that. particularly talking about Maduku and Elton Mangoma, and how it must be very difficult to face your wife after one muka, I got to bring $1,000. Okay, and I go nomination code. I got $1,000.
I mean, this is to be honest, very seriously speaking, love Momaduku. Woke up and said, "This is what I intend to do." And isn't Maduku representing Kupe?
Yeah.
So. This obviously I understand, you know, he's got a profession, he's got a job to do, but surely this is a conflict of interest.
It's wild. I don't understand, my friend. I don't understand.
How do you represent a rival in a presidential election who is in a suit against another rival in a presidential election?
Look, I don't know. The only thing that I can surmise is that some of these guys don't actually respect the Zimbabwean people. I think that's actually, at the end of the day, it needs to come down to something like that.
I completely agree. I think, you know, it's whether it's an ego thing, whether it's, you know, an aspect of self-actualization, I really want to understand, you know, where a lot of these candidates are coming from. And it would be really great. This is where, you know, the media should come in and actually.
No, I have some of it. Apovo News did tried to do some bios on the leaders, but there's nothing besides there.
So the thing is, mine is not so much in terms of the bios, but to understand what their interests are and what their ideologies and principles and policies that they stand for. This would be a great time for me. I'm just interested to have a look at the manifestos, and not so much in the sense of wanting to see what it is they would do, but simply just to see how, you know, similar they are going to be to each other or how different. So I think it was in the group, in the conversations when I was asking about it, and someone brought up the aspect of, it was a conversation I was having with somebody after the list came out, and they said, well, you know, in the UK, you have parties like UKIP, which will never win, but they still exist, and they still contest in the, and I said, my response to that was, you know, I completely agree. There's never anything wrong with having small parties that are there, but those small parties generally tend to represent certain interests. So the Green Party, for example, will be full of environmentalists and people who and will push for environmental issues, and people who subscribe to that, those ideologies, follow those parties. I really want to know sort of ideology. There's a party here that I want to raise, the last one. What's it called? Something about opposition party. Democratic opposition party. Right? Well, you know, what specific, unless they, you know, it, someone mentioned that, you know, it defeats the purpose. If they didn't win, they'd have to change their name because they're no longer in opposition.
Yeah.
But what sort of ideologies or what points are they so fundamentally different from everyone else that, you know, they have to stand alone? And it goes for any of the other ones, United Democratic Front.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, though, Chris. More importantly,
yeah,
it's not so much about, you know, niche interests or minority groups. That I can understand. What minority groups generally do is start from the grassroots. So honestly, I would rather have had Mtawakazi, forgive my pronunciation, you know, Liberation Front leader running for president in Zimbabwe based off the fact that he's hoping that he can show that he can get a million votes or 800,000, however, in Matabeleland, and then use that as a launching point for something.
Yeah, no,
Those things make sense. But these guys, there's no party. You know, when we talk of briefcase parties, these parties only exist in Zek's database.
This is exact, and I completely agree. This is, you know, this is my point, that none of these are actually true minority parties, because I don't believe that they have issues. You mentioned Twaka, and that's a brilliant example, actually, to put up. If they were such a thing, it would make sense. You know, and you could argue that this is why this exists in its form. But here, I can't make a rationale for any of the other ones. For any, you know, and I'm talking about these unknown, and I use unknown, I'll put it in quotes, because there must be somebody who knows them, or they know each other enough to want to do this. Some of the other ones, so Maduku, I question why he would do it, because surely he's smart enough to know that this isn't going to end well. Manyika, I get. Anunzani, no, yeah.
Yeah, but Manyika has built an institution. Nkosana Moyo has built an institution. Tokozani Kupe has stolen an institution. All these guys have something behind them.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Those ones I get. Even Mangoma, Elton Mangoma. I suppose so. And this is, you know, something we can get into. When we look at it, the ones we've considered front runners come from MDC or ZANU PF.
Yeah.
Bar Noah Manyika. So we have from the MDC, you have Chamisa, you have Elton Mangoma, and you have
Kupe.
Tokozani Kupe. Right? These are all former, or, you know, from the MDC. From ZANU PF, you have Mnangagwa, you have Mai Mjuru, you have Mutini. And some would like to group Kosana Moyo there, but, you know, he's his own man. Then the two outsiders, I use it loosely, would be Kosana Moyo and Noah Manyika. That's eight candidates.
That's reasonable.
If we were going into an election with those eight candidates, I would even understand, you know, I can understand why some of the other ones are there, because, you know, they are split away factions from the biggest. And we could make an argument that they might have split away with people from their actual party who are then going to vote for them. Also, when you consider that Elliot Manyika Elton Mangoma is a former elected official.
Yeah.
Joyce Mujuru is a former vice president. Ambrose Mutinji is a former elected official. These are people who
have won, could have won 4,000, 10,000 votes in my constituency. So they at least know somehow in the national election that they can say I've won something before.
Yeah, they have a place from which to start, a base. They have a base. Everyone else on that list, has Maduka ever been elected?
No, of course not.
You see, so everyone else on this list, I'm questioning what makes them think that they, you know, that they can make it thus far. And this really is it baffles me. But, you know, maybe we shouldn't dwell on it long, but it really is strange.
Yeah, but, you know, you then get all sorts of rumors and fear mongering and everything associated with that. I think we're just a nation that's particularly prone to hubris. I think we think we're smarter than we are, we're more capable than we are, and we're very smart and we're very capable. But apana chinoshamisa, and there's nothing special about any of these people. Somehow they believe they're special. And, I mean, that really goes for all the candidates across the parties, but at least some of them.
That's simply it. And now Zek has an issue, because what happens with the ballot paper? You know, and this is something it would be interesting to see in practice, but also I think it would be interesting if you had organizations think tanks or whatever who could test it out and test out or studies in the post after the election, depending on what sort of ballot paper they use, whether they use a long, you know,
thing. But that's a good. We should actually dwell on that a little bit. That's a good question because you know, they constitutionally have to have the names in alphabetical order. So one would assume that they're tied to having a long form from 1 to 23 in a long booklet, straight down, similar to the Ivory Coast ballot paper or the Kenyan or any of these countries, just straight down. Like you know, those ticket papers, this one's just go straight down.
Yeah, so you, like a receipt.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you could, I mean, they could have that long one that goes straight down, or perhaps they could have it on a landscape, and then have, you know, columns, and probably 23, you have, what, four columns with five names each, one, a couple of them with six, maybe, that's another way to perhaps do it. I don't know how they're going to do it, but what I would like to, what I'm interested in knowing is if a study could be done afterwards where you get a group of people, I don't know how many people you'd need for the study, and you have a control with the one that Zek used, and then you have different types of ballot papers, and see whether the results would have changed based on what kind of ballot paper we actually then have in the end. Because if you are, I mean, Chamisa's name is closer to the top.
Yeah.
So he's, if it's a booklet, whatever happens, he's definitely on page one.
Yeah.
Mnangagwa's name is under, just below half. So what happens is, do people scroll down looking for it? What are they going to be looking for? Are they going to be looking for the picture? Are they going to be looking for the name? Are they going to be looking for the party logo? How similar are all these other party logos in terms of color, in terms of
was the last design? I didn't vote in the last election. Was the last ballot paper in color?
I don't know. That's something that I'm not sure. I think so, surely.
I mean,
might be able to. The one I see here is in black and white.
Yeah. So whether it's in color, all these things.
Yeah, the one.
Like,
the
how
one
do they affect people? Yeah. Particularly if you're going to argue that Afrobarometer's, you know, statistics are correct and that there's 26% of the voting, you know, population that's essentially undecided.
Yeah. So the way I see it here is the last one is it simply comes down and you've got the name, you've got the party name next to it, you've got the party logo next to it, picture of the candidate, and then a space to mark your X. And it looks like it's about an A5 sheet of paper, but on this one you have only five names.
Yeah.
So now with 23, this such as a sheet of paper is too small. It's going to have to be, you know, a bit longer. And for all those columns, how do you fit everything in? It's an interesting predicament Zek finds itself in. And it's not only at presidential level. I understand that because there was no
member fee for parliament. Council.
Yeah, because there was no fee for council. So many people were turning up to register their names.
Yeah, I understand that for 46 wards in Harare, there's about 390 council candidates.
Which is, that's a lot of candidates. It should prove to be an interesting. Well, I mean, it's about what, eight maybe, seven or eight candidates per ward.
At council level, yeah.
At council level, yeah. Which is, you know, which.
It's about eight candidates. It's not ridiculous.
It's not. No, no, no. I wonder how it plays out in terms of, you know, who then has power in...
Do you know what I think? This might actually play into the hands of the big parties.
At council level?
At any level. I feel, if you... Because you get all your ballot papers at the same time. If you're faced with... And this is a full-on guess. I mean, people can correct me if I'm wrong. If you're faced with a lot of choices... In that moment, you think, hey, let me find who I recognize instantly. Am I going ZANU, MDC? Cool, I'm going ZANU. Tick, 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 tick. That's it. Like, had it five choices at council, three choices at parliament, and 10 choices at president, you might want to spend more time on it. But
well, so this is the thing. Obviously, with more candidates, it's going to... increase the length of time that an individual spends in the booth, right?
Yeah.
And it might not be the individuals that are in there first that get frustrated. But if you've been standing in the line, and obviously only 1,000 people per polling station. But if you're standing in the line and you are number 700 and something, maybe even 300 and something, and everyone else is taking a lengthier time, you know, how frustrated, when you enter the box, what sort of decision are you going to make? Are you going to then revert to looking down everyone? Or, as you said, are you just going to look for your symbol and say in that thinking, I'm going MDC, whoever it is, ba, 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 and you tick and you put it through? That's another, you know, those are some of the other questions that I have from this voting process.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Talking about the nomination court events itself, it was fairly well run. I think there's not many complaints there. I haven't heard any complaints at all. In terms of the administrative issues of it, besides, of course, the voters' roll, which we might just finish off with at the end because I have a little rant about that. But, yeah, it was fairly well run across the country. There's instances where candidates were fighting, apparently, or allegedly in Chitungiza, stealing each other's nomination papers or heads of nomination parties refusing to sign documents, things like that. But having witnessed nomination court for Harare East for a number of years, these shenanigans always happen. There's really nothing new or nothing unique about this nomination court except the fact that we're more aware of what's happening.
What is your opinion on the way ZEC has been on the way ZEC has been conducting itself since Justice, or in this build up to the elections, since Justice Chikumba took over? Still don't know why Justice Makarao actually resigned. That's something.
Because she was in the wrong basket.
Ah, fair enough. Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't see.
But yeah, what is your opinion on ZEC and the way it's being conducted?
I think she is an efficient manager, but in my humble opinion, she hasn't really gone to address any of the institutional problems that someone from my position or someone from the opposition would have with ZEC. I think this process would have been a lot more chaotic with someone less organized. Mm-hmm. But it's still, there's just institutional problems that really, whether she doesn't have the appetite or the power to solve, that they'll always be there. So ZEC as an institution still is problematic, but she in her own role has done quite well, caveated by the fact that she, I believe, was being dishonest, and this is something I want to talk about later, but we can talk about it now in terms of the voters' role. And
I think we can get to that, the issue of
but the voters' role. Overall, she's done well. I mean, given Zim It's one of the least ineffective institutions. They reply to petitions, which is a first. They give regular press conferences, which is also a first. And they're really attempting to try and be as free and fair as you can be without giving away the election. And I don't know if anyone listens to me and gets annoyed at my bias. If you're expecting me not to be biased, please just it's maybe after election.
Wow. I know exactly where that one is going. Well done. I think Zek is one. There's a noticeable change at Zek. We can start there. And I think, you know, Justice Chikumba is making an effort. Obviously, we all know that there are certain constraints. As you said, the institution itself is not clean. And obviously, if you're cooking in a dirty kitchen, things are going to...
poison the food.
You very much can. But she's trying to at least scrub a pot or two before she puts something in it, which I think is a step in the right direction, and hopefully hopefully she manages to actually see Zek through to being a proper independent institution. I think she definitely has the temperament for the job. Don't know how much influence and control is coming from Lumutapa building, and what sort of pressure she's under. But I definitely think that she can she has the ability to steer the organization into a proper direction. Back to the list of candidates. Actually, one thing that I wanted to discuss is the alliance. So the alliance is now everything's set in stone. Now we know Nelson Chamisa for the alliance. But when the issue of the alliance was being brought about, was it last year or 2 years ago? There was, you know, this idea of a grand coalition that was needed to move Mugabe and ZANU-PF. And not only do we have a splinter MDC, but you know, now we have than we've ever had any ever before. So how do we judge the project of this grand coalition?
I think the grand coalition,
myself included.
Yeah, go ahead.
Might say that the idea of it failed. They did not get a grand coalition. They got a coalition of sorts, but it certainly wasn't a grand coalition. And there were fissures that came out of it, out of the idea of the grand coalition, actually came factionalism rather than there being unity.
Yeah, I think the idea of a grand coalition was not realized. What you essentially then had was a reunification of the original MDC. I think most of the original splinter parts of the MDC sort of came under the MDC alliance, and that's why its name is perhaps more fitting. It's an alliance of the MDC parties. The Thokozani Kupe, you know, split was unfortunate, and I mean, we've had episodes on it, but yeah, the idea of an alliance, a grand coalition, a big tent, didn't materialize as it was envisioned by, you know, the late Dr. Richard Morgan Tsvangirai, who's been credited with coming up with the idea of a coalition. But you know, wafuanaka. So it didn't come together like that. That being said, it's perhaps if we have a situation where there's a runoff, you might see a lot more coalition around a certain candidate. And maybe we just, our democracy is just not there. We're just not in a situation where we can have that.
I mean, so you know, Nkosana was asked a long time ago whether he would join the Grand Coalition. And his argument was, why would I join something, you know, before an election? Why would I, you know, join a thing before it? I will join it after. So you've mentioned a runoff situation. But when I look at it in a run, so if we mentioned eight candidates as main, sort of the three MDC ones, the three ZANU ones, and the two outliers, there's a lot of, so say Emerson and Nelson go off to a runoff, we can assume that Mujuru is not going back to ZANU. So Emerson Nelson can profit from Mujuru. Mutiniri as well.
Yeah. Right?
Then you have Elton Mangoma. Don't know where he stands. You might be in a better
He would likely go back to the MDC.
Okay. You have, although to be fair, I think Mutiniri could be bought. But anyway, then you have Kupe.
She could be bought as well.
Who allegedly, you know, was willing to side with Nkosana Moyo for a fee. You have Nkosana Moyo himself, and then you have Manyika, who I think would just, you know, let it be, unless he's offered something. And this is the thing, is you're going to have both sides lobbying all of these candidates to come onto their side. And this is where, for me, it's going to be interesting to see what actually happens in such a circumstance. Because say a Mujuru has, I don't know, 8 to 10%, right? That could be all you need. What exactly would be on the table for them to be offered? And then how would that affect some of the other alliance members? Because somebody is going to have to give up a position to accommodate Mujuru in whatever it would be. I think it's going to be a very interesting scenario to see how a lot of these things play out, and I think that's where.
But here's something. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the reason why for me the coalition failed to materialize was obviously because of the interests. Everyone was protecting their personal interests ahead of whether it be national interests or people's interests. And also, it's, you know, it's this ego thing of genuinely believing that they are, you know, that you cannot be beneath a certain individual, or you are genuinely better than that person. And how that then plays out, should we go to a runoff, is going to be very interesting and very telling.
Yeah, you know, if I were to write an article about this, then I might post the election. The idea of alliance died when, or successful grand coalition died when the MDC stopped contesting by-elections, because it never had an opportunity to highlight its electoral dominance as a second alternative to ZANU-PF. So the MDC itself was always viewed as too weak to actually be one that you can come as an umbrella under. Whereas if you look at a country such as Kenya, which is, you know, our closest cousin in terms of our electoral history, recent electoral history from perhaps 2007, you know, Kenya had a violent 2007 election, we had a very violent 2008 election, and they both resulted into governments of national unity of sorts. And then following that, the opposition in Kenya attempted an alliance, and you know, it didn't work out. But what are they called again? CORD, and which became NASA at that time, they were winning by elections. They were by far the most powerful opposition party. Odinga was dominant in his space. and it still is dominant in space. Whereas the decision to boycott and, you know, some of those tactical areas on their MDC or just lack of funding, whatever it was, meant that they could never be king in their own sphere.
That you know, that makes absolute sense, and I hadn't thought of that angle.
So
I think that's a very important point.
So now, for the runoff scenario, the MDC or Chamise and the MDC alliance, Chamise in this scenario, would have to, you know, really be around the 40-41% mark. Because without him being that close, you'd likely see a scenario where, you know, your Chokozani Kupes and everyone, and there's some frightening things that people have said, you know, like there's certain, you know, parties that are saying, oh look, whatever happens, and these are small parties, whatever happens after this election, we're going to be in government. Well, not we're going to be the government. We're going to be in government. So there's this belief that, and some of this bad blood in the opposition is runs deep. There's a belief that a government, a national unity, will happen if there's an event of a runoff, similar to a coalition government that would happen in the parliamentary system of England. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of opposition people, a lot of people in the country have been talking about this, and, you know, almost regurgitating rumors here, but there's pros and cons. And I think that's why that chance, what happened to Ngubi and Mutambara in 2008, that chance is probably why you see a lot of these people, your Joyce Mujurus, not actually being in a coalition or an alliance right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting to, you know, to see what happens. And to be quite honest, actually, we could have a GNU, but a GNU not of the major parties. It simply could be a GNU of one major party with, you know, a couple of the other minor parties, enough to get them over the board, over the, you know, whatever percentage that they need.
Yeah, isn't Bettina has already suggested that Sanu take all the women from MDCD, from Kupe's party.
She did, yeah. She did say, you know, she did mention that, because Sanu, obviously, I really don't know what happened there, and
we have an interview, hopefully, that will answer the questions about the women in Zanu PF.
Yeah, we do. Open News is trying to set that up. One of the things that I wanted to say is, I'm waiting now that, you know, nominations are in. I'm waiting to see actually what the field looks like in terms of the parliamentary candidates, who's running for which parties, how many parties are fielding in a lot of in which constituencies. I saw something circulating that, was it in Matabeleland North or something, where MDC councillors were registered in the wrong ward?
Yeah, it's in three councillors in Matobo.
Yeah, in Matobo, who were registered, or who aspiring councillors, but they were registered to vote in the wrong ward, so they couldn't be councillors for the ward that they wanted to be councillors in, or whatever it was, which is, you know, obviously those are administrative errors on the MDC's part, but which then means that whoever's just, you know, whether it's Zanu, I don't know if anyone else did, but some, those could be easy seats won for Zanu.
They've already been won, they're uncontested.
Oh, okay, there you go.
But, you know, if they had the voters' roll.
Yeah, we're coming to that. We're definitely coming to that. But now I'm just interested to see what the electoral landscape actually looks like. We mentioned, you know, in Harare, you have all these 390-something people. I wonder what it's like across the country, and I wonder how long it's going to be until we we get all this information?
7 days.
The same way. 7 days.
Yeah, so all the parties, all the nominated, everyone who's submitted anything has 7 days to amend, remove, change any of their positions. And then after that, a full list of candidates will be published by Zach. So if there's any hope for a grand coalition, the horse trading is happening in these before the election, has to happen in the next 7 days. Because if you actually pull out as a presidential candidate after the final list has come out, you have to bear the cost of reprinting the ballot papers.
And nobody is doing that.
Yep.
Do you get your $1,000 back if you pull out now?
I don't think so. Zim's never refunded anything before, bro.
So nobody's pulling out, bro. Like,
but $1,000, imari yaka 1 day for 80. Ndaba pure 24 million na Mugabe.
For who?
So did you just get 24 million from Mugabe?
I hope so. But you know, there was somebody saying the ZANU-PF is $200 million for its electoral campaign. That's a lot of money, guys. Please let's not. Let's not come out, you know, swinging with numbers like that. $200 million.
That being said, almost a year ago on this podcast, we were talking about $100 million for a ZANU-PF campaign.
Yes.
If you actually think about vehicles in each constituency and motorbikes in each ward, that's almost 50 meters to buy.
Maybe.
Think about it. There's a new Isuzu in each constituency. Not to mention Mabaz and everything like that.
Yeah, maybe if we think about it cumulatively, also in terms of, you know, fuel expenses and all those other incidentals. Yeah, perhaps actually. It could actually reach. Hey, but $200 million, that's a lot of money, guys.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. Anyway, it's so now coming
for your big issue. And Chamisa, you can't be spending $200 million for Chamisa, bro.
How much is the MDC spending?
I don't know. I would have no clue. They've only got 1.8 million ka from the political parties financing.
That's not all they have.
And that's all they've got, player.
That's not all they have.
Where would they get money? This is Makajora Warung.
That's where our $200 million is coming from. Guma vet. Now, man, but auntie, what's his name says he's taking us to Jerusalem. He's so I'm sure there was a Jew or two who got very excited about that news. Nelson, ka? At the manifesto launch.
Yeah, about that one.
Yes. That was something interesting. I was going to say in terms of, you know, manifestos and such things, I do think that people should analyze them and scrutinize them, and make decisions. At the end of the day, I think that we haven't gone through the two manifestos, MDC and ZANU-PF, in depth on this podcast.
We really want to pay for that.
Yeah, we really do. But I think, for me, at the end of the day, is there are going to be a lot of similarities, some differences, some key differences. But it's a trust factor. And it's a, who do you trust to deliver or actually take the country forward? It's really doesn't... I mean, the policies do matter because they give an indication of what kind of leadership we shall have. But at this stage and in this election, the issue is more to do with trusting the person and the party more so than it is about the policies, I think, that the parties are trying to implement.
For me, I think Zim's problems, like we always talk about the economy and everything like that, Zim's problems aren't economic, they're not social, they're political. And for Zim to go forward, it's always going to need a political solution. And that's why you sort of see Nkosana and, you know, like Nkosana is probably one of the best people to take the country forward on paper, but we as a country have understand that our problem isn't so much economic, it's about politics. And that's why you see, you know, when we discuss the manifestos, we ultimately could you agree that at the base of each manifesto is foreign direct investment based neoliberal capitalist economy. That's what both parties want. So you can't really separate them on those issues. But like you said, it's about the actual political solution that people are bringing. So that's why issues, social issues like Murambatsvina, those things become more important. And the ability of, like you were saying, of the new president, whoever that is, to bring the country together around his vision. Because at the end of the day, whether it's Chamisa Care or Command Housing, these are all dreams and they're very difficult to achieve. And people are going to, you know, maybe fail, maybe not be able to achieve all the things in their manifestos. But if there's a political solution, if there's some sanity in the political sphere, then the country can go forward. And that's why this election is so important. Not because of Mugabe not being there, but more important, like how it's run and what happens immediately afterwards. You know, we have two candidates, two lead candidates, who, in my humble opinion, haven't shied away from reaching out to each other. You know, you saw Chamisa on Independence Day, you saw Emerson at Morgan Tsvangirai's house. So whatever happens, there is a chance, a small chance, if the election is run properly, of there being an acceptance of the result and the country moving forward.
That's all I hope for. And I want our politics to also move to a point where it is civil, and where, you know, you spoke about the things that Emerson and Nelson have both done, but also with where the parties and the candidates and the members of the parties get to a position where they actually are trying to hold each other to account, but also to make the country and each other better, where the arguments are being brought forward and contested based on their weight, especially at the higher levels. You know, I think it was Mnangagwa who said, or it might have been S.B. Moyo, you know, at one of these things, that if the MDC has ideas and they're good ideas, we'll take them and we'll implement them. And, you know, we speak about stealing ideas, but at the end of the day, I think it's about what both parties should want is what is best for Zimbabwe. We might have a different vision of how we are going to get to, or what best means, because it is subjective, but we must work collectively to make the country better. And there is room and there is need for a strong government and a strong governing party, as well as a strong opposition party. And the two, or, you know, opposition parties, or the, I'll split them in terms of the governing and the opposition, must be counterweights to each other and assist each other in the process of governing the country. So I do hope that we move to there, and I think we're on the verge, but it really takes the political will to do so, and also a political understanding. And we need to constantly reinforce these ideas and talk about these things, and this is where, you know, I really do hope that the media gets involved, the civil society gets involved, which is why we've spoken about this before, but it's disappointing that a number of our activists have gone on to become politicians, because that was a space, obviously, during an election year, the voice of activists is dampened by the political activities. But that was a space that I think needs to be strengthened and focused on achieving certain things. This flag was a wonderful movement and a wonderful time for Zimbabwe. But I think it never coalesced around a particular ideal vision of what it was, of what it could have been, and how it could fit within the structure of Zimbabwean society, and continue to push agendas and advocate for certain issues that politicians or other institutions might not have a spotlight on.
Yeah, but let's not put the cart before the horse. We solve the political crisis and then we can get there.
Yeah, no, definitely. On to the voters.
This is, I mean, to my point, it's things like this that the issue of the voters' roll in 2013, candidates didn't get the voters' roll. I think until 2014, the full voters' roll. So the issue of the voters' roll historically is particularly sensitive. It's one of those things that after all the money that's been spent on BVR, the push to register everything, bringing out the voters' roll is absolutely critical, crucial, vital, and that's the one thing that they really had to be transparent about. And there's been a few issues. First of all, in the interpretation of the law. To be fair, there's no such thing that says a provisional voter's roll in the Zimbabwean law, only a final voter's roll. Secondly, the voter's roll has to be availed to all candidates that have been successfully nominated or passed through nomination court. So ZEC chose to interpret that they only have to give out a final voter's roll after nomination court to those candidates. That was the deadline they were working with, which is fine in a way, but say that we have the BVR voter's roll inspection period, which you were given a link or a DDI code on your phone. I think it was *125 something, I'm not too certain, where you could check your personal details as an individual.
Yeah.
Which is what ZEC is saying is the voter's roll. It availed to the country. Saying, yeah, we gave you a voter's roll because any individual could check their position on that roll.
Yeah.
The opposition is arguing that no, that's not a voter's roll. That's merely a way for individuals to check. By the very definition of a roll, you should be able to see all of it. Why it's important for the opposition to see the provisional roll, these are BVR is all done on computers. There's really no excuse. ZEC said the roll is incomplete, there's so many mistakes, this will raise problems. The opposition is saying, if you're going to get the roll independently audited, seeing its different iterations and the final roll helps with that. So, for example, if there's 100,000 duplicates which are removed, having evidence could, yes, the roll has gone from 5 5,900,000 people, 900,000 people to 5,800,000 people makes sense because Tawanda Biti was Tawanda Biti, was Tawanda Biti three times.
Yeah.
And whatever else it is, one would rather deal with the problems of that mistake than deal with the lack of transparency, particularly on this issue. Anyway, cool. Nomination court is on Thursday. Voters' roll is announced on Friday. No one has been able to get their hands on it.
But it's the weekend, I told you.
Yeah, I think I've been... fair enough. No, but there were people, and I'll give you this. There were people paying money for the voters' roll on Friday before close of business. Nomination court didn't close. Nomination court was running as long as you were in the room. As long as you were in the room, at midnight, people were still being having their papers processed. As long as Wangawa Pinda Mukyu.
It's been a long week for my people at ZEC. Please.
Nomination court is run by the look, anyway.
No, I'm just. So the fact
that no one could do it, I mean, maybe on Monday we'll get it. If we get it on Monday, sure. If we don't, then it keeps going. And now, go ahead.
I completely agree that the issue of the voters' roll is the single most important issue that needs to be handled. I do, however, how could I put this? I think that the position that ZEC finds itself in is one which they don't want to make a mistake right now, or to be perceived to have been made a mistake right now. And the reason is it's very easy for people to be alarmist, which sometimes happens. And there are instances where once that happens, it can spiral and it can derail the election process. And I think ZEC right now, and I'm assuming all of these are assumptions, are in a very precarious situation with regards to the role that they want to put out something that is not going to have serious blowback. Because they're also dealing with a new system themselves. And also I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is also the first time that ZEC is officially handling the role removed from Home Affairs.
Yeah.
And you also have a new chairperson of ZEC who's come in however many months before the election, after the BVR process had already started. I think there's so many nuances there that they themselves don't want, because they know that this issue can make or break the election. They're so sensitive around it. And I do believe that I do believe and have faith that the roll will be out and that it will be available for inspection and people will be able to purchase it. But I would rather have them be thorough and be somewhat coy right now and produce something thorough than us derailing the election process over something that they feel they were then not ready to deal with or rushed into or pressured into. And what should happen is for them to be transparent about their processes. I haven't followed up in terms of their processes and how far they are. But as long as they are transparent with their processes. But I also say, again, though, as long as they are within the legal mandate. And I think this is another thing, is if there are issues should be brought up in through the right and proper channels, through the courts if need be.
And yeah, but there's a court case. That's why
which is the way I think things should be handled. I think there are people who have the power and the ability to create the impression around the election and around Zek, and I mentioned being alarmist, and I think because of the sensitive nature, because everyone wants this election to work and to be free and fair, processes and procedures must be followed. And at the same time, the institutions themselves must be honest about their processes and their procedures.
Yeah, we're in agreement. And the only thing we differ on is that I don't believe they've been transparent. I don't believe that having commissioners saying one thing on Twitter, then having that pulled back because they've changed their mind, is transparent. I don't believe that it's entirely transparent to say they have availed a provisional voters' roll to the whole entire country. I think that there is a risk of alarmism, possibly, and that is something that one would always have to consider, but at the end of the day, they have to understand the weight or the historical pressure they're under to do the right thing. And from where I'm sitting, they have definitely tried, but moves like not understanding that if the roll is being released on Friday, people need to have it on that Friday, and then closing your offices before anyone can have it is not a show of good faith.
Yeah, I mean, I can't dispute that, and obviously, you know, they must stay true to their
word. And bear in mind, this is, I'm sure the role is not ready, and they must have people working overtime to finalize the role. But we're not dealing with a normal situation where it's just Zek incompetence. We're dealing with a situation where, for example, Advocate Maere, the LO team, ran voters registration in Mount Pleasant during the BVR process. They had people there counting how many people went to register every single day, whether they were yellow, green, blue, whoever they were, they counted. At that one registration center, throughout the whole registration process, they only counted 600 people. That polling station has over 5,500 voters. Fair enough, the 5,000 people could have gone and registered at the central registration center, but if you're dealing with a trust deficit and you're dealing with people that already believe that
things
are being cooked.
Sorry, quick question. How is it that that information is out if the roll is not out?
Oh, the Zek has already released how many people are voting at each polling station so that they can justify having other polling stations.
Oh, okay.
So they released Kuti in Mount Pleasant at the end of the second blitz. We registered 20,000 people, whatever. And
okay,
those 20,000 people have registered at these polling stations.
Okay.
So, in terms of the trust deficit, I mean, you can contain whatever fires you want, and you can you can rationalize it however you want, but we're not operating in a normal environment.
I mean, we've never been operating in a normal environment. And it's a complicated issue that we have before us. And as I mentioned, the role is the single most important thing right now in the run-up to the elections. All I can say is, like I mentioned before, I do hope that ZEC is transparent about their processes. And we'll wait to see when the roll comes out. They've said it's coming out. They've said you can
pay for it.
They've
said it's out.
They've said it's out.
But no one has it.
Yeah, well, it was out on Friday. And like I've said, they've closed for business. That's the only explanation that I have. I'm not justifying it. No. I'm not justifying the excuse. I'm just explaining why people don't have their hands on it. So we wait for Monday and we see whether people can get their hands on the role. And ZEC should avail the role when their office is open at 8 o'clock on Monday, if that is the time that their office is open.
And you know what's the Chris? USB computer.
Yeah, I printed 20 pages.
No, actually,
that's not the way to do it. Because if I take a USB to ZEC and I plug it,
they are giving you USBs.
If they're giving you CDs,
they're giving you an electronic copy of the RAW, or giving you a private link to log on to a secure website. There's many ways to do it.
Yeah, no, obviously there's many ways, but I'm saying you can't just go with your USB because then you just go corrupt the entire system. I've seen these things happen too many times. And I know kuti ma computer ma Harare anoswera ine ma virus.
Mnemshona ma blue movie kati nokuziva.
What there's that other what's it the virus that makes everything a hidden file.
I was gonna say something really snobbish about the computers you use.
I use a Mac, thank you very much.
So how do you know about my virus? In Russian for Mac, it's not my virus.
I know these things.
Anyway.
No, but I completely understand and I agree with your point that, you know, ZEC has acted in bad faith. We wait for Monday, we see whether the roll comes out. And when the roll does come out, I hope that parties, if they're going to independently audit it by themselves, do go through the process. And should they find any discrepancies, I hope they go through the proper channels to correct these things. For the sake of the electorate, 2, for the sake of our democracy, and 3, so as not to again derail the processes. So whether it's through the courts, whether it's through meetings with ZEC, however it's supposed to be handled, let these things follow through, and also let people talk through correct channels. I think we need to move to a system where we are operating within within formal systems and formal structures. We've been informal too long as a country. You know, everything is as whoever decides wakes up one morning to do what it is. I think it's a bad practice, and obviously it's a bad practice that has come about based on the political, economic, and social situation the country has found itself in. We simply just need to now move towards, especially as we get closer to the elections, so that there's also an account and a record of everything that is being done. So that everyone can look back, or the parties themselves can look back and say, if there is an issue post-election, you can say, well, on this date we did XYZ, or on that date we did XYZ, rather than wait for a rush at the last moment. Everything should be in order from henceforth, all the way up until we have the vote on July 30th, and beyond that, regardless of whatever results come out.
Yeah, I agree, comrade.
Yeah, right. I think that's. Oh, I'm so much. Let's see what happens. I see you are scared, Kutis. Zitara kora biswa.
Hey, orang wangu,
Arare iskuru pisa.
Tchangona constituency akura by 20,000 one o nyeso zvudza kuti vano vabva kwese vabva kupi.
Who is it? It's TB, it's Mukupe and
Mkutu.
And Kutu.
That is pretty much TB and Mukupe in my humble estimations.
You don't think Obit has the juice?
Nah, it doesn't have the juice.
Does he even live in Harare East?
I may not. I think he lives in Chizapiti.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
I wonder what he thinks of the new maestro.
It's really funny. There's a video of TB giving a rally in front of the new maestro on top of.
I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah. Now people are working, man. I'm hopeful that something positive happens, and positive doesn't mean TB winning or MDC winning. I think there are a lot of positives that can come out of this election that aren't tied to any particular result. The only result I really want is for Fadzi to win, because I think that'll be an absolute game changer.
You think so? So this is one of the questions that I would have liked Upenyu to ask. Fadzi spoke about all of the things that, you know, she intends to the causes or the issues that she intends to champion should she be elected to parliament. And my biggest question is how does she get, or how does she work it as an independent candidate?
It's a very important question. Who does she focus with? How does she get the votes?
How do you, if you have an issue, if you have bills that you want to bring to the table, how do you get the support? Are you going and obviously we do know she tried to join the alliance and that didn't work out, or there was something there that didn't work out. She's
my stories are more when up a Twitter career.
My rumors are Takanswa. Let's go. Hey, Takanswa kama rumors.
Fadzi works in the same building as Jamisa.
Yeah.
Their offices are floors apart.
Yeah, no,
if she wanted to be part of the alliance, she would have been part of the alliance.
I would love to.
Their terms were just unpalatable, I'm sure. If you want to join a party, you join a party. You can't join.
Yeah. Now this is the thing. Did she want to join the party?
The alliance is a coalition of parties. You have to be part of a party to join the alliance. Would I like to put this again? No, but one how would you an abitia on one? A briefest party, ne briefest rago, se moon, what in the Dutch Islands? No, let's be honest. Sometimes people don't think on a political basis, and it's just real politics, just basic maths. How does that make sense for anyone? Tango join a party, whether you go to BT, whether you go to Mutambara, go to anyone. We've had the discussion about the alliance and people bringing and parties that don't have people.
Anyway, yeah.
So I'm not saying she doesn't have people. She just doesn't have a party. I love her though. I hope she wins.
Oh my gosh, Wajidaki Zanasi. But anyway, so since she doesn't have a party as an independent candidate, how is she going to work around the issues when she gets into parliament?
Kaka
Kokas, very three semi independent. Because it's very easy to... The thing is, you're really going to have to lobby and lobby hard. And it's very easy for others to shut you down. Because, actually, come to the point. Like, you are saying for an alliance, you know, a party, if you want to join. If you get into parliament and you have an issue, and you still want to caucus, say it's the MDC, and get votes, they are still going to ask you, what's in it for them? We must also understand this is how these political systems work, world over. Regardless, where there are negotiations, there's always a quid pro quo. You know, what am I going to get out of it? And it will be interesting to see what sort of conversations happen. You know, there at that level. If Nelson,
what she's hoping for, and what would be great for her, Temba and Jesse, is ZANU-PF for MDC to get 45% of the seats, ZANU-PF for MDC to get the other 45%, and those three votes, those three independent votes, can sway
and then any they
parliamentary
become,
decision. Then they become
they deciders. Become Malema like kingmakers.
Yeah.
That would be great, but I think we're definitely getting a 50%, simply based on the fact that for the most part, those two parties are going to field in 210 constituencies. If you had more parties, so all the other parties are Wana, Noah Manyika, Build Zimbabwe, and all, you know, they'll probably field in the cities. But nationwide, it's likely to be ZANU-PF and MDC. And I think between the two of them,
someone will get 50.
Someone will get 50%. If you had more parties fielding nationwide, then you could say that, you know, because it's what? It's 200. How many seats are there? 210. So 105 is 50%. So you need 106 to just be over 50%. If you had more parties taking at least five seats from, not even five, three, two or three seats from each constituent, from each province, then it would shrink that. I don't think we're going to get that.
Yeah. How it could work, though, is... I need to read up on the proportional reps, because I think, for example, MDC Ngube got a few seats because of proportional reps.
So I think, yeah, you get proportional reps based on the percentage of the vote in that province.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think, for example, NPF in Mashonaland, or MDC Coupe in Matabeleland, those type of parties might cut that down. But I still agree, there will be two main parties in parliament.
But again, even if it is MDC Coupe that cuts that down, or NPF that cuts that down, you are rather, as ZANU-PF or MDC, working with those parties where your three independents or, you know, again end up just being backbenchers. I don't think it's going to be a split where you then don't have a Coupe's party will have a bigger sway than those three independents. They would be more of kingmakers because they probably have more numbers.
And of course, Kai, you have to ask yourself, is parliament going to be making laws in the next 5 years? Because I don't think we've had a parliament that actually makes laws properly in a while.
Well, what parliament's job, I think, for the next 5 years, and we can discuss this at a later date as well, after the election, is what, you know, mandate and roles is to be aligning laws to the constitution, pushing those issues. Parliamentary portfolio committees should actually be going and knocking on ministries' doors and seeing what laws need to actually be aligned and pushing through, because I think they're the ones who, at the end of the day, the bills come through them, don't they? And they themselves are allowed to sponsor bills, so they need to be on the ball.
I think Jesse Manjome said that in the last sitting of parliament, there were three private member bills the whole time. So, Banebas, we've got a long way to go.
We do. But yeah. we'll deal with parliament after the election.
Yeah. When Fadzi is the leader of the new school. And now. Capital 263.